things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff like that. I love it so much that it's passed down to the world they talk about. And then so much of the history we have is because it's fantastic enough that
Hola.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. And it is a crazy historic day.
Yes.
Yesterday, everybody's talking about the one Supreme Court decision with the Second Amendment. And then today, the leaked opinion piece on Roe v. Wade from, I don't know, a month or two ago was officially brought into play. It was 6-3, not 5-4, like some were anticipating. And it is something that I know as a pastor and in the church world, we've given to pregnancy help centers and we've served at events and we've prayed and we've, you know, tried to stand in the gap through various organizations and all this for decades. And it's one of those things that happened before I was born. And I never thought that, like, in my lifetime, it was ever a possibility that it would even be overturned. It was almost one of those things that was just like, well, you know, we just have to deal with it and we'll do the best to resource and do the things we can. And then here we are. And yeah, it's kind of wild. So how does Joe feel?
Right in the middle of a radio broadcast where I had bullet points of things I wanted to talk about. 10 o'clock happens then. And so that's what happened in the midst of our show today. So
That's right, you were filling in.
I was live on air when the news broke.
Nice.
And so the opinion, everything got super heavy, like the everybody from both sides really started getting kind of clamming up a little bit, and it was different.
Did anybody say anything interesting that you were like, oh, I wasn't anticipating that?
Or was they telegraphed this pretty well. Sure. So that what was going to be said already sort of started being said.
Right.
So this is just kind of like the almost the grieving standpoint where we have to go through all of our phases to get everybody their stuff out. I just heard President Biden calling for peaceful whatever as the weekend goes on. So that's my one hope, is that we can keep our stuff together throughout the weekend so that we don't have a little injury to go along with it.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, it's one of those things, though. I know for you, and Deb, you guys are involved with a couple of different organizations that you really love and believe in that come alongside and help moms go through and make a different decision other than abortion.
Right.
And that's been really important to you guys. I know, not only from a financial standpoint, but also from, just a care, prayer, serving standpoint. You love to be involved. Did you ever think this sort of space would come? And what does it mean now for the kind of overall pro-life movement? Because some states are just going to outright ban abortion.
Right.
And other states, you know, you'll still be able to, you know, up until the kids too, you can still, I mean, like some of them have crazy, just very open laws for people to be able to, you know, kill a baby. And so I think in that regard, in the states where it's being outlawed and banned, great. But now the work begins, I think, even more so. Like, yeah, it's great that we have these pregnancy help centers and all that stuff. They need to be more resourced, and we need to come alongside the moms and the kids that are going to be born now, where before they would have been aborted. And you talk about 81 million since 1973. That's a staggering number. Right. But then you talk about the responsibility then from a pro-life position to say, all right, not only do we believe those babies should be born, but we need to resource the moms and the kids and make sure.
Yeah, because there was a reason why that went down, regardless if it was legal or not. There was a need or a call or a desire or hopelessness or whatever.
Yep.
And so people of faith on that side of the deal have an obligation to swoop in there and do your thing.
So what do you foresee? First of all, did you see this overturn coming? Did you think it was a possibility? Like, everybody talked about it when the Supreme Court justices were being appointed, and everybody's like, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Even some of like the most pro-life commentators, like Ben Shapiro, who is, as far right as you get on pro-life as possible. You were like, it's never going to happen. There'll be some sort of medium, variation that'll have to be okay. Never, predicted this. Did you see it coming? Did you think it might happen?
Yeah. I always think of what the catalyst was for right now and this decision. I always thought that there was going to be like an issue that bumps up against this, and that's what makes somebody make a decision. I thought it was too radioactive. There's too much downside for it. So I was thinking, like, why in the middle of everything that this was the time to be able to, you know, pull that card? Because all of those justices are not going to be well liked, or you know, they're, you know, so it's a big deal to happen right now. The cynic part of me said that the leak happened as sort of a distraction, where you take something that would have taken the you know, the gaze of a bunch of people and did a different thing, but then the different thing becomes less radioactive because the big thing had all of your attention. So it was one of those two things.
Interesting. Yeah, I honestly, I never saw a full repeal coming, although I've heard legal experts discuss what a crappy piece of, you know, jurisprudence and yes. you know, just the legal side of the actual Roe v. Wade decision was just not great precedent, not great in any regard, just strictly from a legal standpoint. Forget the principles and the morality, just from the legal precedent. I've heard people talk about it being just, and I don't know, I'm not, that's not my area of expertise, so I can't speak to that.
I still don't know what the why now, though. That's still kind of elusive. Like, yeah. Why did we pick this time frame to...
I mean, the providential person in me is kind of like, well, you know, this case happened to come up at this time. It happened to be, because they've had other cases come up, but the court wasn't in a spot where they were going to take a case, or they've had other cases that have come up and they've decided, you know, we're just going to stick with the precedent that's there and pushed it back down to the lower court. This Mississippi case that came up, you know, put the court in a position to be able to A, take it, and then B, come to the decision that they came to. And 6-3 is a pretty, I mean,
right. You know, so it had to be pretty on board.
Pretty substantial. I mean, even they've had a couple of other decisions that people haven't liked that were 8-1 or 9-0. And it's like, listen, you may not like it, but they're not here to do what's popular. They're here to do what is constitutional.
Right. And I have this charge against the court of being way too partisan in either direction, sure. where it should be just whatever. So that it, now let's just say, the court justices were cleaning up bad law that may have been, you know, zealots were in there and they did something. Sure. So it's one of many that they were scraping through. That's why I'm saying, like, this feels like it was, you know, premeditated, as that they knew that they were going after that one, you know, right off the get go. So I think you might be right, but I still, it feels a little weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly could be, you know, I look at it and you think the political atmosphere right now and all of that stuff, everything is supercharged. Everything's personal.
Right.
You know, people are shouting on both sides of this. And, you know, I love the position of the general superintendent of the Assemblies of God. He said, listen, you know, yes, is this a win for pro-life? And we've been praying for this and we've been giving and interceding, all the things that we know to do. Yes, but this isn't a time to gloat. This is a time for us to recalibrate and figure out how are we going to resource? How are we going to help moms, kids, etc. You know, I think that will be the big question. You're going to have a whole bunch of legislation that comes down statesides now, where they know, hey, we can do this, this, and this, and that'll become the law in that state. I'm a big fan of states' rights, you know, across the board. Sure. I'm not crazy about gun laws in certain states versus other states, but realistically, you know, those states have to figure some of those things out within the context of the Constitution, which was the Second Amendment case that we had on the other side. I've seen people conflating the two, saying in one, they gave, you know, they took the rights away from the state to make their own gun laws how they wanted to do that. And now they're giving the states the right to decide how they want to do abortion. You know, shouldn't it be the same thing? And I just think they're different because the Second Amendment gives clear guidelines and boundaries. There's no amendment for abortion. They try to use a privacy clause and whatever, and that's where
that's the messiness.
Correct. Yeah. Ben Shapiro and others said that that's the legal side that just is messy with Roe v. Wade. Is there's no amendment to be able to kill your baby. There's no abortion right in the Constitution. They use the right to privacy to kind of push that through, and they you know went left, right, upside down, you know, put in the cheat code AAB, you know, up, down, back, you know, to get there. And it's just held this whole time because of the political push and the bent of the court. And so now that you know, have a court that's looking, going, well, this isn't constitutional. It's a bad piece of, you know, and this case comes in and they're able to go, all right, well, this has been terrible anyway. Let's just push it back to the states because that's where it belongs. The Constitution really doesn't speak to this issue. Right. So if in California you want to have abortion, so be it. If in Ohio you want to be able to hear the fetal heartbeat, so be it. If in Mississippi you want to ban abortions altogether, so be it. And every state will have their own ruling on it. The difference on the flip with the Second Amendment one is essentially what Justice Clarence Thomas wrote in his opinion was that the right to bear arms outside of the home is just as important as inside, and it shouldn't be, you shouldn't have to give a reason to need a concealed carry permit. There's no other right that we have to give a reason to be able to speak freely or have to be able to give a reason to worship a certain way. And he's saying you shouldn't have to give a reason to need a firearm for self-protection.
Yeah. And that puts onus on legislators to write things that don't conflict with the Constitution.
Correct. Correct. And so, you know, when you look at that, they're actually both consistent. They're just looking at the document and going that. And that's the thing that I love about. So you can argue politics, right? You can argue policy. You can argue morality. You can argue theology. The Constitution gives you this beautiful document that the rules are there. Like, it's like when you play a game of Monopoly, like this is how you buy hotels and this is how you, like it's spelled out. And yeah, you may argue over, well, is there a comma there or an and? Like, I get some of the discrepancies, but by and large, it is a very straightforward document. And so you have the rules, and when people play by the rules, you get the results that the rules should determine. And what everybody gets upset about is when they think the rules are wrong. Well, that's a whole different discussion.
Right.
Then, you know, you can disagree with their decision, but you're not, their decision is based on the document that they have.
Okay. So now let's just say your side starts losing. Yeah. And do you say, I want to change the rules so my side doesn't lose as often? Or are you a good loser and knowing you got to do a different thing rather than change? Like, you know, if I lose a Monopoly, then I want to roll three times to your one and I'll win faster. Right.
But that's legitimately, that's the wrestle, right? So in politics right now, you have the culture counterculture, right? So for the longest time, you had the kind of white Anglo-Saxon Protestant run on the political spectrum, good, bad, or otherwise, and that was left and right politically.
It's just what it was.
Just what it was. Yeah. And as parties have shifted and things have moved, that culture has come down, and you have to come to a space, at least for me anyway, as you look at the culture that's here politically, you had everybody agreed with the system. The system being the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, all of that. What we have currently is you have one party that says the Constitution, although may have its, you know, and America may have its flaws, the Declaration of Independence, all that stuff, not saying it was perfect in history, not saying it's even a perfect document, but it is the rules that govern this country and has made this country what it is. You have one side saying that all of that needs to be thrown out, or at least the parts of it that we don't like, so that we can exactly. Do this differently. And you have another side saying, look, I don't like some of the things that it says. I would like some of these things to be different, but you know how we get there is we vote on them. We have a constitutional convention. We there's a way to change the document. If you don't like it, you don't just get to throw out the parts that you don't want.
And I'll tell you, like, throughout history, it's never been perfect. There's never been perfect in implementation or wording or whatever. And that's why there's a part of the system that is a near perfect, or it also declares itself an imperfect document.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I think it's the belief in the idea of what America could be, the belief in the idea of what America in the founders' hearts was, that is different depending on the political side of the aisle. Some people genuinely believe that, you know, America is evil and all go down the list and needs to be completely remade. And that is certainly a belief structure that they're entitled to. It's the freedom of speech. I don't like it, but in the same breath, I think it is their God-given right, not a right given to them by the Constitution, or by me, because I say that they can feel that way. They can feel however they want.
Right.
But that I think is the more clarity you get on this and the more conversations I have with people on either side, you have one set of people that says, you know, our history, however flawed, and our documents, however imperfect, are the God-given documents that we have and the rules that we play by and have made us a great country, and we're going to work within those confines. And then you have people saying, well, all of that has given us this awful, evil system, and we want to remake it. And then there's even, I don't want to paint everybody that way. There's some on the other side that just want to remake the system because they think there's better things that we can do.
All right. So let's say, if, and I'll make a statement and then I'll ask your opinion on this. So it, let's just say I give you the scepter and you do have the chance to go into our founding documents and you have one chance, one swing to make a change. Right. Now, me, I would find myself not necessarily adding anything, but I would probably be a remover. I would use my swipe to take something out of there.
What would you take?
I'm not sure. I'd have to evaluate this. I have to think about it for a minute, but I can picture myself saying, okay, well, like, I want less of government, not more. So my swing is going to be a carve out, not a, an addition.
I would agree with that. I definitely think there could be a carve out for sure. I'd have to go back and look at it. Like, I wasn't, like, I'm not a drinker, but not a huge fan of like prohibition in that sense. Like, and they corrected it, but they the reasons that they established it and corrected it are just, you know, there's no real need for those sort of things. So some of them I think are a little, you know, administrative in that sense, but, you know, in the vast majority, there's a way to do that though. There's a way to take the scepter out. Like, you get 2/3 of the state on board, 3/4 of the Congress. Like, there's a way to amend. They give us a path to amend. Yes, is it difficult? Sure, but it should be, because this affects everybody. If you don't like it, don't live in that state versus this state. Don't, you know, get on your community school board and change the things you need to change. We've talked about that before, and everybody wants to do a big, broad brushstroke from the top. You know, I find myself more and more as a pastor, a community leader, I'm kind of like, listen, like, as long as you leave my family alone and leave me alone, and I can get together with people in my community and we can disagree on stuff and have some conversations and come out the other side, like, I'm cool with that.
I'm with you, man.
Like, you want to marry who you want to marry. You want to live your life however you're going to live your life. I'm not.
Well, you're like away. Me. You're more of a persuader than a tell people what to do kind of person. Laws make people do things. Mm-hmm. You want to explain to them, and you want to bring them over to your side through logic.
I want to paint a picture of something more beautiful that they can't, you know, they look at and go, man, I want that. You know, that's the way to do it. And so, and left and right are both guilty of this. I mean, you know, you look at the culture wars of the right in the 70s, 80s, and it led to my opinion, the modern progressive movement that didn't want to be told that they had to do this and couldn't do that and couldn't smoke this and couldn't go there. Like, it led to a lot of this emergence of that. But it's interesting that the very tactics that they hated, that conservative, you know, anti-drug, you know, religious right kind of movement used on them, they're using the exact same tactics just on the secular humanist left. And now the cultural right and political right is going like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah. Let me throw this at you. Yeah. So this was brought up earlier today. We were talking before the whole thing the news broke out, that early on around the Civil War time, when they held elections, that the person who got the most votes was the president, mm-hmm. and the second one. And then they found what would happen is when they had these cabinets that were having opposing views, there was a lot of assassination attempts and murder attempts, and there was a lot of bad stuff happened.
Duels.
Because, right. And so they're like, hey, we got to protect the executive office by making it so that they don't have enemies staying in the same, you know, household. And so, like, at first I was like, oh, we should do more of that. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. They were able to go back and see that there was a symptom they couldn't see when they wrote the book. Because in theory, that's a really good deal.
Yeah.
You create conflict, you create compromise in the executive office before it wields anything.
That's why they have the filibuster. That's there you why go. They have those things. It's supposed to make people
exactly.
angry.
Exactly. So really, that's what it is. It's not necessarily getting it right, but having the ability to change often enough to make these small little calculated changes.
Yeah. And I get that, you know, there are things that the founding fathers couldn't foresee culturally or otherwise, but that's why we have the processes that we have. And they had the foresight enough to recognize, hey, we need some mechanisms to be able to shift things. And we need the different branches need to make each other upset. Like, the legislative branch doesn't need to agree with the executive branch, and the judicial branch doesn't need to agree. Like, they designed it that way. Yes. It was supposed to make each other mad, and was supposed to be an iron sharpens iron kind of deal.
Well, I invented a time machine. Mm-hmm. And I have a service where I will go back in time and I will ask the founders and I will tell you the information, and nobody is buying my service for some reason.
No, I mean, well, the thing is that time machine's called a library.
Yes.
I mean, that's the whole thing. It's called a library, and reading the original documents and getting into that space. And
the Federalist Papers, no idea how
I have
much
a copy
you can
on my
get
bookshelf.
In the yep. head of our founders when you read those documents, because it's no different than it is today.
Yep. Well, and it's interesting because this is the same argument we have in the church, right? So the church, and when I say that word, I'm going to talk about the people that use the 66 traditional Orthodox books in the canon of Scripture. I understand there are others that add stuff and take stuff away, but the Protestant Bible, right? There's so many different Protestant denominations, but you pretty much have one or two major distinctions, and it all comes back to how do you read the document. And it's fascinating to me, and it's one of the reasons conservative evangelical Christians tend to fall on the conservative political side. It's not just because it checks all of their boxes. It's not because they like war. It's not like everybody wants to so simplify it. It's because from a time I was a kid, I was told that this document is the source of the Bible, is the source for all life and everything else, and I need to understand what it meant in its original context so that I can understand what it needs to mean for me today. And from the time I could read it, that's the way my parents taught me to read it. That's the way I was taught to read it in Bible school and everything else. And so then when I approach the Constitution or another founding document or whatever, I read it the same way. What did Hamilton mean when he wrote this in Federalist Paper, whatever? What did Jefferson mean when he wrote this? What was his intention?
Do you know who I blame for the original sin on this? And I was just a kid when it happened. But when somebody said, it depends on what the definition of it is, right? Because it occurred to me, like, are there really people that don't know what we mean when we say is? Or I don't remember what the actual word was when Clinton said it. But
sure.
he's the first one that made you challenge a way of manipulating language to be able to get to something that was not in the original understanding of it. And think about even the terms we use today.
Correct.
That we've had that same bastardization to.
Yep, exactly right. It's fascinating to watch because words matter.
Yeah.
And words across the board have impact, and they can, you think about it. I'm going to go theological here, but okay. I'll bring it back in. The creation of the world, the biblical account of creation happens when God speaks. His words create physical things, right? And we're created in the image of God. So our words have the power to create. You and I talk about this with the law of attraction and all that sort of stuff. And you watch that, and the Bible talks about the enemy or the adversary, the devil. Some people use that term. And he is the father of lies. And the Bible actually says when he speaks his native tongue, all he can do is lie. And he manipulates language to get what he wants. And it's so fascinating to watch these things play out in one, and they both, you know, in that sense, words have that power to go out from somebody and create, you know, whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right. Like those words have, you know, power in that sense. And so when we get into this space and we can't define words, it stops the creative mechanism. It bottles it up.
Ooh,
and
that's a good angle.
That's
man.
The frustration that I think a lot of people are feeling is we can't even create anything together because we don't agree on the terms. And when you don't have the words to put towards it, or you're not believing the same thing about the words, you can't get any legislation done. You can't get anything accomplished. And so I personally think if the enemy, so to speak, can't get his way, he would rather stifle the creative process than allow anything to move forward. And that's what we're missing right now. We don't have a common language. We're all speaking English, but very different versions.
And if God had a co-creator that was going to like say, well, what do you mean by the heavens? Like, yeah. The heavens to me or the heavens to you, it would have crushed that creation power.
But think about it. So in that Genesis account, God creates everything. He puts Adam and Eve in the garden, and then the serpent shows up. And what's the first thing the serpent does? Did God really say?
Mm-hmm.
It's the exactly. first thing he did. He attacked his words because he knew, hey, if I can just get them to question it, if I can just get them to redefine it, then they can't move forward in anything he's asked them to do. And so in that sense, their disobedience, while it was taking a piece of fruit, was the end action. It actually started with the questioning of language.
Yeah, and you know what? Honestly, the most authoritative rule sets are the most simple, that don't need over-explanation.
100%.
So when people go into a paragraph to explain something, it's usually some kind of marketing language or trying to sell you on something.
Yeah.
If they're like, don't kill, right? And they walk away, right? You could figure the rest out yourself, right?
Well, does that mean with a rock or with...
right.
Can we have subclause section 8?
Exactly.
Well, and that's why one of the things during the 2016, it's 2015 Republican primary, I loved two of Ted Cruz's proposals, and I wish they would be adopted in Congress, regardless of what you think of Ted Cruz. I think to have bills only be allowed to be on one piece of paper, that would solve a whole lot of issues.
Yeah, right.
You don't need subclause section 8, like, we're going to fix the roads. Here's where the money's going to do this, this, and this. Done. And the same way, you know, he talked about, you know, with taxes, being able to fill out your taxes on a 3x5 card.
Right.
You know, our tax system is so bloated and so dumb. And it, like, there's so many loopholes for this and loopholes for that. It's like, I'm a huge fan of, hey, I live in America. Send me my 8% bill, 15%, whatever it is, send me the bill. Let me pay it. I shouldn't have to pay an accountant to do this, and I shouldn't have to figure out how many miles I drove my car. So I can, like, I'm happy to cover the cost of the military and all the stuff that we're supposed to be doing according to the Constitution.
All right. So I just wrote a bill. It's called the We're Not Gonna Kick Puppies Bill. And so the first object is that we're going to make sure that we don't kick puppies. We're going to reward people for not kicking puppies. And we're going to give John Smith $50 billion. Okay? Now, do you support?
Why do you want to kick puppies, Doug?
That's exactly right.
Right.
So, but and it's that, you know, if, yep. When I hear something like somebody voted against the bill, I immediately bring the text down the bill and I try to figure out what in that bill they could have absolutely objected to. And every bill that I find has 70% I would probably agree with.
Exactly.
And 30% I would kill the bill too.
Exactly. The it's the old illustration of, you know, if I made you a huge tray of brownies, but I put a tiny little dog turd in there and smushed it in, you didn't know where the dog turd was, would you eat the brownies?
I don't think so.
Right. But that's what happens with these bills. They put it in, they dress it up, they title it real well. It's a marketing campaign, but then they make a poop sandwich in the middle. And it's like, well, who wants to eat that?
Right.
Well, no, I don't want to do that. Well, but
and that's what I'm saying. Like, you give them a postcard and say, don't kick puppies, sign it. Don't blah, blah, sign it. Give Bob Smith $550 billion. Don't sign it. And that would be way better, right? Yeah. We have the technology that means that you don't have to fit it all in one piece of paper. We've got schedules and we've got computer systems.
Well,
and
think about it. Even when you, so we're buying and selling our house right now. Even when you buy and sell a house, you go down a list and you have to initial this. Do you agree with that? Do you agree with that? Do you want to offer a home warranty? Do you want it? Like, it is all a la carte. And could you imagine, you know, even so Biden's Build Back Better, regardless of the promo, what you know about it, I'm sure there's some things in there that are probably pretty good to do for the country. I didn't read the whole thing. I heard it was pretty long. But I'm also sure that there's some garbage in there.
Right.
And to allow, what if they allowed, you know, politicians to go down and go, you know what? Yeah, we need to take care of this part of the infrastructure. Yeah, don't need to do that. Don't need to do that. And they were able to pick a la carte from a menu like that. And then you take the things that get, oh, wow, 100% of people want to fix these 12 bridges. I guess we should fix them.
Right.
You know, and then, oh, you know what? Only 20% of the people want to do this. I guess we don't need to do that.
Well, here's what would happen. The people that disagree with that would say, well, then nothing would get done. And the founding fathers would be like, yeah, because it's going to force you to, next time you come to the table, bring a better game, right? This is the lazy game we're playing, where we stuff a bunch of pork in there so that people will vote for shit that they would never vote if it were on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sad because there's so much that the American people need and deserve. And the founding fathers did a great job laying that out in the Constitution. And if we did the things that we were called to do and told to do, I believe we'd be a lot better off. And if we left the things alone to the free market and to other things that we keep touching and messing up, I think we'd be a lot better off.
So I have two discussions within this one. The macro, where the founding document does protections that sort of above all this other stuff.
Right.
And the micro, when you've come across hurting people, you're there for them.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what your politics are on the grander scheme.
Well, and if you look at the statistics across the board, those folks who believe in the founding documents are far more generous than those who don't. I mean, that's just a fact across the board. You can Google that. Those who tend to be right-wing evangelical conservatives give more in charity, give more across the board. And so, you know, in that sense, you know, are there in these regards. So yeah, all right, yeah, I'm totally pro-life. I love the fact that Roe v. Wade was overturned, and I'm not just like, okay, that's done. No, now I'm like, there's about to be a whole army of babies that we need to help resource and care for, and the church needs to be there for, and moms that don't know how to do this, and teen moms that are now going to have to figure this out. Like, we need to step in and be responsible in that regard. It's the same thing, you know, when you talk about, you know, homelessness or, you know, feeding hungry people. Like, I look at all that and I go, all right, you know, yes. Do I want people to be personally responsible for themselves? Absolutely. Do people need to work hard and need to get a job if it's a bit, like all of those things? Yes. But I also grew up in a family that my parents went through a bankruptcy and we lost a house. And I remember my mom having the booklet and we were on food stamps for a little bit. I get where there's some of these safety nets that make sense. But you and I would both agree, like, hey, we need to be working people towards self-sufficiency and self-responsibility. It doesn't mean that I'm pro-homelessness because right. I want people to have access to a job and to work for themselves and the dignity of getting up and being able to pay their bills and all of that stuff. In the same way as a pastor, I get people all the time that want to come in, and we would love to help everybody that comes through our doors. But there are some people that I go, you know what? We've helped you out a couple times. You know, if we're going to continue to help out in any way, we want to give you the tools, because this is, we're not a bank in this way. The people don't give money to the church just so that we can underwrite your electric bill. like we'll help you out a month.
Let's see what's going on there.
Exactly. But you're going to have to come in because there's got to be some sort of responsibility, or I'll pay for you for the rest of your life.
So you nailed it with the sort of like what the states can do from this point. Either these states position themselves where they keep this in the political realm and it goes nowhere, or the states can say, all right, now that we have a chance, we can get sort of federal underwriting to support mm-hmm. the people that live here in my state. Yep. And if there's a problem with incest or there's a problem with rape, right, that is the underlying problem. And the states can solve their problems Correct. Using that support. So I'd much rather have a federal, you know, some federal budget that supports states for supporting babies and single mothers and all of those situations so that we make those better the right way.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing is like, you know, everybody to every position, there's a demonization. You know, why don't you want to not kick puppies?
Right.
Well, no, I actually didn't want to give him $50 billion. No. You actually, and that media apparatus, the social media, all that stuff just, you know, beats people over the head. Somebody who I find fascinating, I don't agree with her on everything, but I've been following her on social media since the previous election, is Tulsi Gabbard. I don't know if you've followed
her. Oh, Tulsi's awesome.
So a maverick in the sense that she's probably more of a middle-of-the-road Democrat, and just fascinating. Like, she came out and had this wonderfully articulate, personal thought on the Second Amendment vote that the Supreme Court took. And I sat there and thought to myself, it's logical. It makes sense. I agree with most of what she said. She seems reasonable. Like, in that sense, I'm like, that's somebody I feel like I could
totally
talk with and engage in conversation.
Yes.
And I think she's strategically positioning herself that way. She's right. not stupid. She's a bright woman, bright politician. But in that regard, like, she's come out with other stuff that I'm like, you know what? I could have a conversation about that. I don't agree with anything she just said, but she's approaching it. And she's not making enemies. She's not here saying, well, if you believe this, you're wrong. You believe that, you're wrong. But it's just very fascinating to watch somebody like that. And I'm like, man, we need more of that in political office, regardless of whether it's slightly to the left or slightly to the right.
Somebody and I think every era has one of those, the Joe Liebermans, something that articulate, and you know, they're not just having a ego fight or anything like that, right. or willing to listen, but we usually wash those people out. We're not real kind Correct. To those middle people, because we want our tribe. We want you to be all in, and we need your vote.
Yeah. And she got torched in the primary sure, because 100%. Of that, you know, but I think it's fascinating, and she's going, I think a little bit of a different route. I'll be interested to see, you know, what that looks like for her and, in the future. I'd be very interested to see that, cause she thinks,
she
and that's the part that's exciting. Like even people on the right that, you know, if they think and are willing to engage, like, for me, that's so attractive. Like, I'd rather have the questions and us walk away from the table being like, well, you're like, way off on
off
that
reservation.
And you know what, you might think I'm way off on that, but we're still friends.
Yeah. But I think stuff like this, we do have tons of opportunity in coming to that central place where we can get along and talk a common language, unless the media apparatus and the political parties splinter us back out the other
direction. They don't want us to have a common language. Right. That's the whole thing. The media, the political apparatus, all of that, the machinery there wants us polarized. They want Coke and Pepsi. And I think the American people have to shrug some of this off, and there has to be a common sense. You and I've talked about this so much. There's got to be a common sense middle somewhere for people to say, you know what, socially, here's where I'm at on issues, but you know what, we do need to take care of this and this, and I'm okay with electric cars and or whatever, right? Like, you know, and figuring out, all right, how do we do this? Let's have some common sense. And that's what attracts me. I don't agree with Bill Maher on hardly any of his political stances, but you and I've talked about this, him, Joe Rogan, some of those guys are to the left of where I am on a number of things. I mean, heck, Joe Rogan and Bill Maher were high through half their interview.
Right.
It's not something I would personally sanction, but they're allowing people to come to the table and debate and bring opinions that are different than theirs. And I just find that refreshing, and that's one of the reasons I like Ben Shapiro. Yes, he's very conservative and I tend to agree with him on a lot of stuff, but he'll bring people on that are totally opposite. Him and Bill Maher had a beautiful discussion on the Sunday special. And so we need more of that. We need more tables, you know, where people can sit around and have conversations and disagree and not hate each other.
Yeah. And change your freaking mind. Like you're being so entrenched with trying to be right, even in spite, like after everybody's given up, your tribe says that you're still right and you won't ever come off of that. Well, Bill Maher goes into that negative light because he stayed the same.
Yeah.
Right. And the world changed around him and he just kept saying the same thing. So it's one of those things where people get really defensive about being made to feel stupid and being wrong. And if we're going to change that culture, those are the two things that we start with, where we, you know, when you're a Tulsi, and as long as you're not doing it for the shock experience, it for that effect, if you're really just not afraid to say, well, this is what I believe in, I'm going to be pretty alone here, and, you know, be here for me. Like, I'd totally go to Tulsi's rescue more than I would a partisan.
Yeah, 100%. And I think on a day like this, where you have what the media and political apparatus would like to be something that divides us, I realistically think that the country has the ability to push past all the garbage and come together to take care of moms and babies. And like, we should be able to push through this and go, all right, you can't change it. It is what it is. You know, by all means, go ahead and try and pass the laws that you need to pass in your state and push for what you believe in. But in the meantime, let's take care of all the moms and babies. Like, we should be able to come together on
that. Amen to that.
So I hope that there is more coming together in our future and less driving apart.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is Original Youngstown.